As we left off in chapter 3, Jonah had just preached one of the greatest revivals in history. Now you stop and think about that. As I pondered that this week, Jonah preached for those 40 days in Nineveh. And during those 40 days of preaching, the entire city repented and turned to God. God does not tell us how many people were in the city, but He tells us how many children there were that couldn't tell their right hand from the left. So just talk about, you know, 3 or 4 year old kids. 120,000 of them. So if there was 120,000 of those little children, there'd certainly be at least another 120,000 of older children, and probably twice that many. And then there's the moms and the dads. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. And they all turned to God during that revival that He had. Wonderful, great revival. But we saw at the end of chapter 3 that Jonah, his response was not very... Actually, in verse number 1 of chapter 4, that his response was not very good. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly. He was very angry. A real nice guy. Here's a preacher. He's preaching his heart out. And the whole city turns to God. And Jonah's ticked off. He is not happy. He's angry. What a response from the preacher. You know, I've never had that kind of a revival. If I did, God would never give me one, because I'd start strutting around thinking, wow, what a good preacher I must be. Yeah. But Jonah, instead of doing that, he's angry with God. And we wonder why. You know, you ask yourself, why would Jonah be angry with God over that? He spared Nineveh. Well, there's a couple of thoughts that come to my mind. Remember, Jonah didn't like the Ninevites to begin with. He was hoping God would send on fire from heaven and cook them all. I mean, he wanted them done. And now that God saves them, or rescues them and delivers them from judgment, news gets back to Israel. Oh, the old prophet Jonah's been up there in Nineveh preaching. What happened? Oh, they had a great revival. What? Those old pagans? Oh, why didn't God just burn them all? Well, not a real good reputation for Jonah. Whereas if it would have turned the other way around and God sent down fire from heaven and burned them all up, and Jonah comes back home and says, yep, I preached up to them. Look what happened. God got them. And everybody's going, good on you, Jonah, good on you. I don't know what was going on, but something happened. And inside of Jonah's heart, he's saying, that's not fair. I don't like that. And he was angry with God. He lacked God's compassion. Now, God had compassion on the city. Jonah had none. And we're going to see that as we work our way through here this morning, that God had great compassion on that wicked city. And Jonah lacked that compassion. But you know, the truth of the matter is, sometimes I see the same kind of an attitude in my own heart as Jonah had. Lacking compassion. You see somebody that's kind of a down and outer, somebody that's just not taking care of themselves, and they're having a bad way, and maybe they're a tramp-looking person, or maybe they're just, you know... you see all these people that are living godless, wicked lives, and you think, ugh, serves them right. You know, and sometimes in our heart, we can have bad attitudes toward them. God has compassion. He looked down on that wicked, rotten city. Now, God doesn't say anything about their morals, but we know that when God looked down at the time of Noah, it was the morality of the people and the wickedness of their heart that God wiped out the world in Noah's day. It was the morality of the people in Nineveh, or in Sodom and Gomorrah, that God looked down on and said, I've had enough, and He wiped them out. Now He's going to wipe out Nineveh, and we don't know exactly what their sins were, but we know they were a wicked place, and God called them a wicked people. So wicked that God was ready to wipe them off the map. And Jonah's preaching brought revival, and God spared them. God had compassion. And we need compassion like God's. We ask ourselves an important question. How? How can I become more compassionate like God? How can I have more compassion toward the people that I meet tomorrow in the streets? How can I have more compassion toward my neighbors that irk me? How can I have more compassion toward the people that just are such miserable people to be around? How can I have more compassion in my heart for them instead of just wishing that they get lost? We need compassion. How do we get that? Well, here we find several things here in the book of Jonah that I think can be of help to us in chapter 4. Let me go ahead and read through chapter 4, so we'll get the context of it, and then we'll come back and we'll pick it up and follow it through. Jonah chapter 4, and verse number 1. But it displeased... Let me read the last verse of chapter 3, and it'll give us the context. And God saw the words that they... their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil that he had said that he would do unto them, and he did it not. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was very angry. And he prayed unto the Lord and said, I pray thee, O Lord... O Lord, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Therefore I fled before unto Tarshish, for I knew that thou wert a gracious God and merciful and slow to anger and of great kindness and repentest of the evil. Therefore now, O Lord, take, I beseech thee, my life from me, for it is better that for me to die than to live. Real good attitude you had, you know. And then said the Lord, dost thou well to be angry? So Jonah went out of the city and sat on the east side of the city, and there made him a booth. And he sat under it in a shadow till he might see what would become of the city. And the Lord God prepared a gourd and it made it to come up over Jonah, and that it might be a shadow over his head to deliver him from his grief. So Jonah was exceeding glad for the gourd. And God prepared a worm when the morning rose the next day, and it smote the gourd, that it withered. And it came to pass when the sun did rise that God prepared a vehement east wind. And the sun beat upon the head of Jonah, that he fainted and wished in himself to die, and said, it is better for me to die than to live. And God said to Jonah, dost thou well to be angry for the gourd? And he said, I do well to be angry, even unto death. Then said the Lord, thou hast had pity on the gourd, for which thou hast not labored, neither madest it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. And should not I spare Nineveh, that great city, wherein were more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between the right hand and their left hand, and also much cattle? So as we look at this passage here this morning, I want us to notice several things that will help us to understand how can we get more compassion like God. Number one is this. We need to embrace God's heart. We need to embrace God's heart. What was God's heart like? Well, as we ponder the heart of God, we see here that Jonah describes the heart of God in the end of verse number 2. And he says in verse 2, I prayed unto the Lord, and I pray thee, O Lord, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Therefore I fled before thee unto Tarshish, for I knew that thou wert a gracious God, and so on. We'll look at that in a moment. God was not like the pagan gods. You know, even when we lived in Papua New Guinea, one of the first things that I learned, I remember when we went to Papua New Guinea, I was so green. I was about 26 years old, I think, 25, 26 years old. I was still young, and I grew up on a farm. I didn't understand a lot of things. And we got to the village. I remember the very first time my coworker Jerry drove me down to the village where we ended up living for 2 years. And I looked around and I thought, I can't believe people live like this. I can't believe this. Their houses were made of bamboo and sticks, dirt floor, grass roof. They were cooking over open fires. I thought, I can't believe people live like this. It just overwhelmed me. And I had no idea that I would end up living in that same village for 2 years. But one of the things that I learned when we got to the village very quickly is the people were very, very terrified of the gods or the spirits. The spirits were terrifying to them. And the chief of the village, he had stashed up in the rafters of his house some of the masks that they would carve. And tourists sometimes buy those kind of masks. I would never recommend that. Those masks that he had were representative of the evil spirits that they feared. And they would get them down during special times of festival. And they would have these dances they called Sing Sing dances. And those Sing Sing dances were not just a bunch of fun. I asked the people, why do you have this? Oh, we have a good time. I said, no, tell me, why do you have these dances? Well, come on, tell me the truth. Well, because we fear the spirits and we're trying to appease the spirits of the dead so that they don't bother us anymore. And we're having these dances to kind of appease them because we're fearful of them. They were terrified of the people. Now, that is true all around the world. The gods of the unbelievers that are not worshiping the God of heaven, those gods are fearful gods most of the time. And Jonah, he looked at God and said, God, you're not like that. You're the opposite of that, and I know that. You're a loving God, a God that's slow to anger, and he gives off all these descriptions of God. Look at the heart of God there in verse number 2. He said, thou art a gracious God. In other words, God was tender and full of grace, that unmerited favor. He would look at people and say, I want the best for them. Even though there are terrible people, I want the best for them. That's God's heart. He said he was merciful. The idea of compassionate, forgiving. God is a compassionate, forgiving, merciful God. Unlike the demons of the world, the fearful gods of the pagans, he is slow to anger. In other words, he does not get angry with sinners quickly. I mean, if God was quick to anger, the first time somebody did something wrong, bang, he's done. But God doesn't do that. He's slow to anger. Think about how many times in your life you've done something you know was not right. And God didn't send down his big club and bang you over the head right away. He could have, but he was slow to anger. God's patient with us. Doesn't please him, but he's patient with us. Slow to anger. Of great kindness. In other words, full of tender kindness. He is full, overflowing with tender kindness toward us. He repenteth and repenteth thee of the evil. This is an interesting phrase. I looked it up and it literally means to be sorry about, to be made sorry by evil, or to be made compassionate for the unhappy. He says, God, you are made sorry for the evil. God, in his heart, he just says, I'm sorry for them. I am compassionate toward those that are struggling and having a difficult time and those that are hard. And he says, I knew you were like that, God. You are such a tender, loving, forgiving, merciful, gracious, repentant God. I knew you were like that. And I knew as soon as I preached and they said they were sorry that you'd forgive them. And that's not what I wanted. Jonah didn't have God's compassion, but these are good qualities of our God. We'd all agree with that. We like being around people that have these kind of qualities. Gracious, merciful, slow to anger, kind, you know, repenting of evil. They don't want it, you know, they want the best for us. That's the kind of people we like being around. That's the kind of people we ought to be. We need more of God's compassion. And if our God was not gracious, merciful, slow to anger, kind, and sorry by evil, we would be in big trouble. I can't answer for you, but I know myself. I know my own wicked heart. I'd be in big trouble if God wasn't merciful. I would, you know, long ago I would have been cooked. But God is merciful. God is a gracious God. And we have a wonderful, gracious God. Jonah knew the compassion of God's heart, but he did not share it. He didn't have the same kind of compassion in heart. He had a spiteful heart.
His spiteful words there are against God. He says, I knew you were that kind of God. That's why I fled to Tarshish, because I knew that's what kind of God you were. And I don't want that. He wasn't being very smart, because he didn't want that for the pagans, but he did kind of want God's mercy for himself. And sometimes we can be that same way. We want God's kindness to us, but maybe not to the guy that's hurting us, or the neighbor that's noisy, or you're somebody that's irritating us. And, I mean, you know, get them, but you know, we want God's compassion on us. We need to remember it goes both ways. And Jonah here lacked the heart compassion of God. We need to put on the heart of God. You know, Jonah forgot that he was no more worthy of compassion, God's compassion, than the Ninevites were. He had a high opinion of himself and a very low opinion of others, especially terrorists like the Ninevites. He longed to see God overthrow the city of Nineveh and with some supernatural power. And since God didn't do that, he got angry. You know, our world is full of God-haters, terrorists, cruel dictators, abusers, haters of biblical morality, and Christian persecutors were just as difficult to love as the Ninevites. If we're not careful, we'll adopt the same bitter attitude Jonah had. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that we want to say, oh, if I just had whatever I wanted in life, I would just go live amongst all these real rotten criminals. No, that's not something that appeals to us, but we ought to have compassion on them. Reach out to them. Pray for them. Have God's heart toward them. Jesus, during his ministry, many times he ministered to the down and outers. He ministered to the publicans and the sinners and the harlots and the people that were wicked in their lifestyle. He ministered to them. He never partook of their sins. He never condoned their sins. But he ministered to them. He had a compassionate heart. Jonah didn't. To become more compassionate like God, we must put on the heart of God. Jesus said in Matthew 5:44, but I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you. That's not our natural response. And when someone is cruel to you, or mean to you, or a neighbor is caustic toward you, or even harmful toward you, our first response isn't, God, show me how to be a blessing to them. Help me to show them your love. That's not the first thing that comes to our mind. The first thing that comes to our mind is more of Jonah's attitude. God, get them. But God has compassion, and we need compassion like God. God says we're to love our enemies, those that curse us, those that hate us, those that despitefully use us, those that persecute us, we're to love them. Now, that does not mean, you know, somebody swears at you and hurts you and curses you and, or abuses you in some way, and you say, oh, come on, let me give you a hug and a kiss. Now, guys, that's not the love he's talking about here. He's not talking about loving them and kissing them and that kind of stuff. He's talking about the love. What is love? You know, maybe we need to go back to that. What is the definition of love? Love is a giving of yourself to meet the needs of another, expecting nothing in return. You can love people you don't like. All right? Think on that. You can love people you don't like. Love is an action. It is acting toward them in a way to help them, to benefit them, expecting nothing in return. That's love. Now, you can do that to somebody you don't even like. He's not here talking about going up to them and giving them hugs and kisses and making them your best friend. Jesus went on in Matthew 7:12, and he says, therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, Do even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Our little summary of that is a lot easier to grasp. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do to others like you want them to do to you. Now, how would I want them to do it to me? You know, we need to put ourselves in that situation. If you were the person that was the homeless, struggling person that is dirty and smelly, and they just genuinely can't seem to get above the bottom, no matter how hard they try. If you were in that situation, or if I was in that situation, wouldn't we want someone to be compassionate toward us? At least friendly toward us? Instead of cursing us or walking the other way or doing something drastic? No, we would want people to treat us with kindness. And so when people are not kind to us, we need to think, how would I want them to respond if it was the other way around? And again, that's not easy. I'll be the first to tell you, you know, that's not my first response. I've had people do mean things to me in the past. Had a neighbor at one point that was very cruel to us. Even damaged some of our property. My first response wasn't, oh, Lord, what can I do for him to be really, really nice? No, my first response was, God, would you get him back for this? I was more like Jonah. We need to have a compassionate heart like God. And that's going to take God's help because it's not natural to us. We need to put on the heart of God. In order to do that, we need to humble ourselves and obey the Scriptures and depend upon God's help. God was gracious, merciful, slow to anger, kind, and turned from evil. But we see another thing about the passage here that helps us to embrace this compassion is we need to embrace God's empathy. It goes hand in hand with what we just looked at here, but it moves on. Verse number 4 to 11. We see here the empathy of God. You know, we need to put ourselves in the other person's shoes. And that God had already prepared for Jonah several things. Did you ever catch this as you go through the book of Jonah? God prepared 4 different things in the book of Jonah. He prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah. That was merciful. God could have had him drowned. But instead he prepared a great fish where he could survive inside of that fish for 3 days. He prepared then, in our passage before us, he prepared, secondly, a gourd. Thirdly, he prepared a worm. And lastly, he prepared a vehement east wind. All of these were miracles from God. God was involving miracles in his dealing with Jonah. Now let's just take a look at that for a moment. What's this gourd? It says that a gourd grew up and gave him shade. Now, I enjoy gardening, and Peter and some of the others of you enjoy gardening. But I'll tell you one thing. I've never had a plant that I planted in the ground, and the next day it was big enough to give me shade. That was a miracle. I mean, Jonah must have sat there looking at that thing and said, this is phenomenal. You watch it grow, and it grew up until it was up above him and puts out its big leaves. And Jonah says, oh, that was nice. Look at it shading me. I mean, this thing grew fast. In one day, he saw it grow right up around him and gave him leaves over him and shaded him from the sun. And he was saying, wow, that is really, really nice. Now, it doesn't appear that Jonah even considered the fact that God did that. It was almost like Jonah was thinking, wow, this is kind of neat. Wonder how that happened. Now, he wasn't thinking God was looking after him. But then we move on, and the next morning, God sent a worm. He prepared a worm. Now, worms are not gardener's friends, usually. At least not the kind that chew off the plants. And here's one. He got inside of that gourd, down probably by the base of it, burrowed a hole in there, started chewing it off, and all of a sudden, that poor gourd didn't have any more water. And when the sun came up, the leaves all went,
And they all wilted and it died. And Jonah's thinking, that wasn't very nice. That was a nice gourd. That worm, that miserable worm. Look what it did. And then God said, all right, I want you to catch the message real clearly, Jonah. And God sent a vehement east wind. Now that vehement east wind was a hot, sultry east wind. That's what the word vehement means. Hot and sultry. Just that sweaty, hot, sticky east wind. And so it's scorching hot out there. The wind's coming across the hillside. Jonah's sitting there by his wilted little plant and baking in the sun. And Jonah says, it's not fair. I want to die. It's not fair. And so Jonah's all fired up and disgusted because this gourd came up and it was beautiful. And then that rotten worm got in there and killed the plant. And now that the east wind comes, it's not fair. I want to die. So Jonah's all fired up about this and excited. Now, why did God put Jonah through all this little scenario? God was trying to teach Jonah empathy. He was trying to teach Jonah to have some empathy. God applied these things to Jonah's situation. And God pointed out to Jonah that he had pity on the gourd that he did not create. He did not cause it to grow. And it came up in a day, or not a day, and it died in a day. And he had nothing to do with any of that. And yet Jonah had great pity on that. You know, look down there, verse number 10. Then said the Lord, thou hast had pity on the gourd for which thou hast not labored. He said, you didn't do anything to get that gourd there. You didn't plant it. You didn't cause it to grow. You didn't water it. Nothing. You did nothing. It came up in a night. So you didn't labor for it. You didn't make it to grow. It came up at night and it perished in the night. He said, Jonah, it had nothing to do with you. It had everything to do with me. I did that. And then he goes on to tell Jonah, he says, Jonah, should not I spare Nineveh, that great city wherein there are 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left? And much cattle. He said, Jonah, you need to have some empathy. You need to have some empathy. You need to think about this situation from another person's perspective. Jonah had pity on that little gourd that grew up and shaded his head, but he had no pity on the city that he had preached to for 40 days. Apparently, when he was wandering through those streets of Nineveh shouting out, 40 days and judgment's coming, 40 days and God's going to destroy this place. There was no pity in his heart, no empathy, no desire to see those people saved, no desire to see them rescued from God. He was just hoping that they would ignore his message and that God would send down fire or some other way of earthquake or whatever and destroy them completely. That was Jonah's desire. He had no pity. None at all. And God said, Jonah, you had more pity on this little gourd that grew up that you had nothing to do with than you do on me. I found it very interesting. J. Vernon McGee, if you've ever read any of his commentaries, McGee is more of a... His commentaries are not as deep and rich. They're more of a devotional type commentaries. And he has some pretty good ideas sometimes. And I want to read you a little quote of what he said about this phrase here. And I quote, may I say to you, it's ridiculous the gourds that you and I get attached to in this world today. How many people have a gourd to which they are giving today? They've given their time to it, their energy, their money. They give everything to it. And what is it really? End of quote. He said, you know, he says, we too have gourds in our life. Now, he's not talking about an actual plant that's growing up. He's talking about the little things we have in our life that are so important to us. This car, or this new house, or this boat, or this precious thing I have, or this special thing. These are our little gourds, and we take care of our little gourds, and they're so important to us, and they're so valuable to us, and we're so excited about them. And God says, they're here today, gone tomorrow. They're not nearly as important as the souls of people. And yet we spend more time on our little toys and our gourds than we do on caring about the souls of people.
we lack God's compassion. Missionary William Carey, who was missionary to India years ago, he said, "I am not afraid of failure. I'm afraid of succeeding at things that do not matter." Whew. That's a good statement. He said, "I'm not afraid of failure, but I'm afraid of succeeding in things that don't matter." And, you know, as you look at your own life, there's probably things that you have succeeded in your life that really don't matter. We can work really hard at earning a reward or earning a trophy or earning something, or even it's just recognition. It doesn't really matter. When you die, you're going to leave it all behind. You know, the only thing we can take with us, remember what Jesus said? He said, "Lay up treasure in heaven where moth and rust doth not corrupt and where thieves do not break through and steal." The only thing we're going to be able to take with us is what we lay up in heaven. What can you lay up in heaven today? You can lay up in heaven your honor to God, the way that you live your life. If we reach people for Christ, we can lay that up in heaven. Witnessing for the Lord, testifying for the Lord. Sometimes it can be discouraged. You think, you know, I've told lots of people about Jesus, but very few people come to Christ. That is frustrating. But God takes all that into consideration. It's all laying up in heaven. God's going to open the books one day, and He's got a record of everything we've done. Is it just a little gourd that's going to be here today and gone tomorrow, or is it something that's really going to last for eternity? What are we living for? What is life all about? Jonah had the wrong perspective. We need to remember God had mercy on us. God had mercy on Jonah, but Jonah didn't think of that. He was born in Israel as an Israelite, one of God's chosen people. God spoke to him at one point in his life and called him to preach. Jonah is a preacher of righteousness. He's preaching revivals and God's blessing his preaching. And God was taking care of Jonah. When God called Jonah to go to Nineveh and Jonah ran the other way, God could have struck him dead right then. And I have an idea that Jonah thought when he said, "Throw me into the ocean." He said, "That's the end of it. I'm done. I deserve it. I got what I got coming to me." But God had mercy on him again. Set that fish, swallowed him up. Jonah survived there for 3 days, and then God had mercy again, had that fish spit him out on shore, and said, "All right, Jonah, why don't you go to Nineveh?" God had mercy on Jonah. Jonah forgets all that. He had no pity on the people of Nineveh, but God had pity on even the little children. The 120,000 little children there in Nineveh, and all the animals, he said. Think about that. God said, "I even have pity on the animals." It's interesting. And Jonah had no pity on any of it. He just wanted to see it all destroyed. We too must reflect on the mercy of God that He's shown to us. If not for God's mercy, we could be just like the most unsavory, wicked, rotten people that you know. Could be you. Could be me. You know, when you see some person that's just riddled with drug addiction and they're drunk and they're staggering around and they don't have anything and they look like they're dressed in rags and they're half-starved, and you think, could be me. It could be me. But God had mercy. God allowed me to have different circumstances than that. God is merciful to me. And I need to have compassion on those kind of people. And that doesn't come naturally for me. And perhaps it doesn't come naturally for you either. But the compassion of the heart of God, we need more of that. They're no better than we are. You know, we could be in the same situation if it wasn't for God's mercy. But then one last thing I want us to notice here is we will become more compassionate like God if we will embrace God's burden. God longs for all to hear the gospel. Jonah was sitting back there in his hometown, and in Israel, and God says, "Jonah, got a mission for you." "Yep, I'm ready, Lord. Whatever you want. I want you to go to Nineveh." No. God called Jonah to go to Nineveh because God cared about those Ninevite people. Jonah didn't care about them, but God did. And God had a passion for them to hear the truth and to repent. How about you and me? Do we care enough about those around us to share the gospel with them? It's not easy. Just the other day, Melody and I we stopped at the store in the evening after church on Wednesday night, and there was a guy, rough-looking fellow with kind of a handkerchief tied around his head. Real gruff-looking guy. And he had real loud music playing. He had some kind of a music player in his pocket. It was just blasting away. He was sitting right in front of where I parked my car. We got in the car after we did our shopping, and I said, "Probably should go offer that guy a track." I don't really want to. Here it was dark outside. It was about 9 o'clock, 8:45. And I thought, well, I better. So I pulled the track out, opened the door, walked up and offered it to him, and he says, "Nope, not interested." I said, "Okay, fine. Have a nice evening." I got back in the car, and I hadn't started the car yet, and he got up and he came over and stood by my door. And I said, "What now?" Well, I opened the door, come find out. This guy, he says, "I'm sorry." He says, I wasn't trying to be rude to you. But he says, I've grown up around Christianity. And I don't see that it's the truth. And I've been a Hindu Muslim for like 6 or 7 years. And didn't sound like he was happy with that either. He was just miserable inside. And I talked to him, chatted with him a little bit, and I tried to tell him, you know, that not all Christianity is like what he saw. And before he finished talking, he says, I'll take your paper. And he took my track and went off. I didn't want to do that. But I'm glad I did. I'm glad I did. And you know, there's people you're going to meet this week that you're not going to want to talk to either. But after you do, you'll be glad you did. Even if he would have not come back to the car and accepted the track, I was so glad I did. I gave him a chance. That's what we got to do. I need more compassion. And you probably do too. We need to have a burden like God has for the lost. A fellow named Carl Henry once said, "The gospel is only good news if it reaches the lost in time." God's desire for all to be saved needs to be our desire. Salvation of souls is the heartbeat of God. We see this all through the New Testament. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse number 4. "Who will have all men to be saved and come unto the knowledge of the truth." 2 Peter 3, 9. "But the Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long suffering to us. We're not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance." That's the heartbeat of God. Jonah did not force Nineveh to believe. He just preached to them. God convicted their hearts. They repented, and God forgave them. God was pleased to use his word to convict those Ninevites. And God can do that yet today. You know, when you pass out a tract, people may not want it. They may not, you know, but you never know. Sometimes they may take it and hold on it for a long time. We've got evidence of that here today. Sandy may not realize this, but I put a track in her mom's box when Sandy was just a little girl. And it sat there for, and she took it and put it in a drawer for months. I don't know, I've never asked her why, but after several months, she took the track out of her drawer and said, I'm going to go visit that church. You just never know. You never know. And just like with Cindy, I gave her a track several years later. 7 years later, 6 or 7 years later, she came to church. You don't know. Just keep passing out the word. Keep witnessing. Keep sharing the gospel. God can use it.
Henry Martin, a missionary to India and Persia, said that the Spirit of Christ is the spirit of missions. The nearer we get to Him, the more intensely missionary we become. How can we have a greater compassion for the unbelievers? Well, we need to have a compassion like God's. We need to ask God to help us to embrace His heart, His empathy, and His burden. Is God tugging at your heart this morning to go and tell the untold millions there's a great need? There is a need. If we'll surrender, God will use us. God may not call you to be a foreign missionary in some foreign land, but if you're a Christian, God wants you to be a witness for Him around your area, to pass out tracts, to tell people of Jesus. You can do it. God wants us to. We need to have a compassion for the lost. We need to pray and ask the Lord to give us that compassion, that passion for souls we sang about. Are you giving and praying for missions? All of us can do that. We can all get involved in praying and giving. Time's running out. We need compassion for the lost. Jesus could come back today. I hope He does. But it'll be too late for the world around us if He does. We need to share the gospel while we have an opportunity.